Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Unsung heroes. Unsung heroes.
Hi, and welcome to Unsung Heroes. It's lovely to be back. This week we are going to be chatting with Kim Wilde, my beautiful sister. And we're going to be talking about the new Greatest Hits compilation, which is just being released. And it's basically encompasses the whole catalogue of tracks we've been working on for so many years. But Lee very kindly came down, as did Kimmy, and we decided we were going to have a good old talk and really delve into the nitty-gritty of all these old tracks. I really hope you enjoy it. We absolutely loved it, and it's so lovely to go back and talk about all those old times and the recording and the whole process of where the ideas came from. And it's in two parts because obviously there's two CDs and we're going through track by track as they appear on the CD. So without further ado, let's get cracking into it. I'll hand you over to Lee Bennett.
Hello, everyone. It's Lee Bennett here on Ricky Wilde's Unsung Heroes. It is a really, really special occasion today because we are here to celebrate the forthcoming release of Pop Don't Stop, the definitive and only proper greatest hits of Ms. Kim Wilde. And I am so thrilled to say I have the chance to be here with Ricky Wilde and Kim Wilde today. And we are going to talk music in depth for the next however many hours.
How exciting. Well, we haven't actually done that before, have we?
We haven't really at all. And this is a great time to do it. 40 years into our career, sir. And with Pop Don't Stop, the greatest hits, it's such an amazing collection. Cherry Red have just done us so proud.
Yeah, the fans are, you know, when the announcement came out, you know, the Twitterverse was lively when people could see what the CD looked like and what the amazing deluxe box set looks like that's just got absolutely everything anyone could ever want on it. So, we are going to do a proper track by track of the two CDs on the main release. And then later on, we will hopefully catch you up with some other goodies as well that you can find across the other discs as well. So
I can honestly say I'm really looking forward to delving back into those years and bringing back all those lovely memories, because we've got such amazing stories and lovely memories, haven't we, of those days?
Amazing memories. And I was saying to you earlier, I've just been moving a lot of my old stuff from one room to another area in the house, and to find the things that I've been finding, even the cassettes, and I've got a cassette player which I was smart enough to keep hold of and still works amazingly, only just though. And putting those cassettes on, listening to your early demos, our early stuff, stuff that when I started writing, it's just magical, really, to it takes you straight back. So you'll have to come and do that with me at some point, Rick. It's really fun.
I look forward to that.
I wonder how much of it you've forgotten, Ricky.
All of it.
No, you haven't. It'll all come back to you. You'll know it as soon as you hear it.
So one of the things that struck me when I first saw the track list for Pop Don't Stop is how very you it was to be so very out there and not put the track list in chronological order, which is what most people would have expected of something like this. You know, that's the normal thing to do. And it was like, this is so you to do the unexpected with this. What was the thought behind just that process being so different?
Well, we gave Matt Bristow at Cherry Red a real long lead on this whole thing. I think sometimes when you're working with people, you've got to let them do what they do. We know what we do. We know exactly what we're doing when we're in the studio and recording. And when you have someone full of enthusiasm for a project like this saying, I really want to do this and this is how we're going to do it, you say, yeah, go with it. And I think so we took a big step back, actually, and just let Matt get on with it. And that's why I keep mentioning Cherry Red, because they're doing it for a lot of artists now. I can see all the great research that they're doing and the great love that they have for the artists that they work with, and respect. And so we've given that respect back to them and just said, get on with it. And when they came back with that, that track listing, I was a bit surprised.
Yeah.
But I thought, I trusted them.
Yeah.
And I think, Rick, you felt the same way.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's lovely that they are. We do things differently, and they kind of get that. And
it's
like
a good
that
way to do lot. It, because I think as well, as we'll talk about shortly, there are some songs on there that, particularly for the British fans, they might not be as familiar with. And actually hearing them mixed in the way that they will be with the songs that they'll know they'll be more familiar with is a great way for them to discover them. It'll be a lovely discovery journey,
yeah,
I think,
yeah.
doing it in that way. So we're going to kick off with disc one.
Okay.
And the first song on disc one is The Second Time, which is what a way to open things. You know, a live favourite, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure when I've spoken to Scarlett, she says it's her favourite, I think, to play live.
Yeah. I think it's changed. It's evolved into what it is now. We never used to do it live. But so since the advent of Ableton and all the synths that we've got, all the new technology that we have for live performances, it's really transformed, and we love performing that now.
Well, yeah, it's got the rock edge now, so it's a guitar funk dance thing that we can have a lot of fun with, and the audience seem to really love it too. So
when I look,
I think we're in love with the song now in a way we probably weren't with it back in the day.
When I look at the arrangements in terms of who played what on it, you played everything.
And I did.
When you read the list of this is like a flashback in time to the 80s. So you play Roland, Stratocaster, Yamaha, Mini Moog, and Synclavier.
Synclavier,
all of that.
Yeah. Well, that was actually one of the first tracks that I wrote with the Synclavier, but that had only just come into the studio. The price of a house, but it was amazing bit of kit and very inspiring, and it inspired me to write it. So it was worth every penny.
I think also it was quite inspired by the sort of the Trevor Horn thing.
Oh, absolutely,
it?
Trevor, and he's a boss. And,
very futuristic. Quite futuristic in a way.
Yeah, it was, and the video became that.
Barbarella.
You know, it was very sci-fi and apocalyptic, and we had a lot of fun with the video, and it completely captured the atmosphere of the song. It was one of the few videos that actually really captured the atmosphere of the song perfectly, unlike some others where I was holding a Hoover and
the touch.
I think, you know, we love The Touch as a great song, and then the video just let it down horribly. Yeah. But I think the second time we came up trumps.
Yeah, do you still have the outfits from the second time? Do you keep hold of those sorts of things?
I've got a few things from that time. I mean, quite a few things have gone for charity and auction. So someone out there's got them. I've got a few pieces left.
Rumours were back in the day that you weren't happy with the fact that the record label chose a cover image from that video in that outfit for the Teasers and Dares album, because you didn't necessarily feel it was representative of the album. Do you remember feeling
that? I think at the time I was doing a lot of promotion around the world, and it was really hard to keep track with, you know, we didn't have email then.
Yeah.
And we, you know, can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, so weird.
Write them a letter.
Yeah, so yeah. I'd be sort of like on a plane back from Denmark or France or something, and a decision would have to be made. And, you know, stuff had to get done. Yeah.
How did we function in those days?
I just don't know how we did it.
You were busy with your clavier. You didn't care.
I remember getting back from abroad somewhere and that, you know, and then I kind of took a drive up to Hertfordshire where, where the office was in Nebworth and being presented with a decision that had actually already been made. And I think in a way for me, just because I was a young 20-year-old or something, I just didn't like people always just making decisions for me all the time. And there was a little bit of that going on at that time.
Yeah.
Mostly for practical reasons. I really wasn't in the UK. I was always in the rest of the world. So I got over it, though. I got over it. The album did okay. And we were, you know, Rick and I was really focused on the music. And things like image and stuff, they came... not even a close second, actually. It was always about the music and the production and making the best record we could make. And, you know, a lot of the times, as I said before, I think the videos really supported our music. And there were just one or two times when they didn't.
Yeah. No, I think... And you look back at the Second Time video now and it's just... It just epitomises the 80s.
It really does.
It's very cool.
It's really fun.
It's perfect pop.
Yeah,
So track two is a real classic. It's Never Trust a Stranger.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about this one today? Probably one of your most timeless, I would say, in terms of sounds as fresh, I think.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you. That's nice to hear. We love performing this one as well. That's always a crowd favourite. And, it's a lovely one to perform. But I remember writing it. It came so quickly, the chorus and... it's very strange. Sometimes you'll write something and then the first thing that comes into your head just to sing along with to make it feel so you kind of get into the melody and the feel of the song and how it's going to sound. You just sing the first words that come into your head and that was it. Never trust a stranger with your heart. And it came very, very quickly and programmed it up within, I think it was about half an hour. The bare bones of it, and then Kimmy was working in the back house at the time with Steve Bird, writing.
Hey, Mr. Heartache.
Yes, that's right. And so she came in for a cup of coffee, to grab a coffee, and I said, "Oh, I've listened to this. What do you think?" And straight away, I could tell that she really loved it.
Oh,
and
it's blown away.
we just knew that there was something there with it. So we just. Carried on recording and developing it and getting the production ideas. I was very influenced by Pet Shop Boys at the time. I loved It's a Sin and all the stuff that they were doing then. A wonderful, big drum sounds and
very dramatic. Sounds.
Yeah, I love all that. I really love that stuff. So it's very heavily influenced by the production of that. So that's where all that came from. Loved it.
Yeah, it's one of my favourites, Never Trust a Stranger, to perform and...
You get to really belt it, don't you?
I get to really belt it out and, yeah, it really suits my voice. And, you know, we know where that sort of sweet range is now, Rick and I, and we sort of look for it when we're writing songs. Where does your voice sound really good? It sounds quite good up there, so let's go up there then. And so a lot of our songs do go up there quite a lot because that's really where I can cut a note. Mm. But of course, I can go down to the other end too. The smoky range, and I enjoy going down there too when I do. But I think probably when people think of my voice, they think of it up there, belting it out. And of all the songs that I've done, Stranger is the ultimate song to do that with.
Absolutely. Mm.
I remember when we were mixing that as well. Obviously, there was a chap called Julian Mendelson, who's an absolute legend, remixer and producer and engineer. And he'd been working with the Pet Shop Boys, doing all of their stuff. And I just thought he could be an amazing addition to the production and mixing of that track. So I called him up and I said, would you be up for mixing it? And bless him, he said yes. And he came down to our studio, at Select Sound Studios that we had, and he came in and lit up a joint and got cracking on it. And he just absolutely smashed it. And but yeah, a wonderful guy who now lives in Australia, and we did manage to bump into him a few years ago when we were touring there. But lovely man, very, very understated, and yeah, loved him. But he absolutely smashed the mix on that.
He did too. Now, track three. Now, a recurring theme I think we will cover off in some of these discussions is singles choices in terms of why some were singles and some weren't. And track three is something that was never a single in the UK, but by golly, it should have been. It's Million Miles Away.
Million Miles Away,
from
yeah.
Love
yeah,
It.
Yeah, yeah.
What a stunner.
Mm.
It's such a beautiful song. And such a beautiful video.
The gorgeous video.
It's a gorgeous video.
That's the airport video, isn't it?
Yeah, some gorgeous man that I got to just smooch up with all day. And I had the best time doing that video. It was gorgeous. The song, I think lyrically, is one of my favourite lyrics that I've written.
Yeah. It's one of those classic, there are several when I look back that are just classic Kim and Ricky tracks.
Yeah.
It's got that magic. It's the harm, the melody, the lyric, the production. Mm. It's you two together. It always just seems to work when there's nobody else involved in the writing. It seems, I think, that's the purest.
Yeah. Well, the great thing with our partnership, our writing partnership, is that Kim, we're on so on the same level of lyrically how we think it should go. And I mean, with Million Miles Away, again, that, our engineer at that time, Jim Richards, who is still a wonderful guy and a lovely, a real close friend of mine. We see each other a lot, and his father recently passed away, like literally like a week before that was written. And so that was kind of in my mind. I was thinking, you're a million miles away. And that's the first thing I sung. Like, you're a million miles away, but I feel you in my heart. And then I just kind of said, look, this is the idea to Kimmy. And same with Stranger. I said, look, this is the idea. Never trust a stranger. Make it dark. And straight away, just Kim is so on the same level. And she just kind of goes away, takes it with her, and just lives and breathes it for a couple of days, and then comes back and says, look, this is a lyric I've got. What do you think? And and you smashed it on both of those.
It's a song we're definitely really looking forward to introducing back into the set.
Oh, yeah.
When we do the Greatest Hits tour next year.
Lovely to hear that.
So we're definitely going to bring that back to life, aren't we, Ruth?
Yeah, have we performed that? I can't remember now.
Do you know what? We haven't.
We haven't
because we kind of got to a point where we had so many singles and we decided to keep our set very single-centric.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got other places we can go with it now. And then, of course, we've got a very interesting combination of approaches to the Greatest Hits tour because we have so many songs. So we're doing some of them sort of a segue. We're, putting songs together of a similar genre.
Idea.
Stuff like that. Just so, and that means that we get to have a lot of songs on the set that people go, and Million Miles Away will be one of those.
I often think sometimes some songs are either an answer to another song or directly follow. And because they're in consequential albums, I always think that Never Trust a Stranger, the part two of Never Trust a Stranger is Can't Get Enough, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then I always feel Million Miles Away has a similar sonic feel to those two. It feels like those three tracks flow as a kind of story.
So make a note of that, Rick. We'll make sure that we put those together.
There's just something about the way that they flow. I think if you played those three together, they feel like they're telling a story from sort of start to finish in a strange sort of way.
Yeah.
So track four is a very important one for you, Kim. It's Another Step. So it's the first time that one of the songs that you've written is a single, and not just a single, but it's a smash. It's a top 10 smash with Junior. How did it feel having one of your songs?
Well, it was just fantastic. You know, it was wonderful to have my career begin the way it did. It was glorious. But all the while, I always knew that if I didn't develop as a songwriter, then it wouldn't mean as much to me. You know, these beautiful gifts of songs and the people who I admired, the great songwriters. And I wanted to be part of that club. or even a little bit of a part of that club. You know, I knew I wasn't going to end up being Joni Mitchell, but I thought I have got something to contribute here, since it's my career after all. So let's just give it a go. And I tried, and I wrote a load of really crap songs because lots of all songwriters do. But
I don't think you did, though. You say that. I don't. I remember everything you played was great. I just liked everything.
It's interesting. I had a conversation with my son today, who was just talking about all the crap songs he writes, and I think they're all great too, and not just because I'm his mum. So I think there is that whole kind of tortured artist effect that all creative people do. And I'm sure you would say you've written a lot of crap songs, and I was
I definitely have.
So getting through that kind of the crap factor, any creative person has to do it, whether you're a painter, whatever you're doing creatively, the only person that can stop you is yourself. And luckily, when I started teaming up with Steve Bird, he and I got on really, really well, and he was an amazing guitarist, incredible talent, and we used to have fun writing, and Another Step really embodied that. I was over the moon when it was a big hit, and it encouraged me to carry on writing.
Did you picture it as a duet when you wrote it?
I can't remember. I don't think that we did. I think that sort of came about with some conversations and how to freshen the whole thing up. And we were huge fans of Junior Giscombe. You know, obviously we just adored Mummies to Say and just enjoyed that incredible soul voice of his. Can't remember how we made the connection in the end, but it was an inspired moment. And then he came into our life and ended up being, you know, quite a big part of my career for a few years.
Yeah, he appeared several times.
You know, and Hey Mr. Heartache and a few other things.
Yeah. And did you feel nervous that it was chosen as the second single to, you know, following up You Keep Me Hanging On? That was going to be a tough proposition, whatever song you picked from Another Step. How did you feel that it was one of yours that was picked to do that? Do you remember feeling nervous about it?
Yeah, I was really nervous at the time, yeah. I was amazed when it did so very well.
Yeah.
It was like the beginning steps. Another Step was just another step, beginning steps for me as a songwriter, and gave me, you know, as I said, the confidence to carry on and put myself in that club that I wanted to be in, the Songwriters Club.
Yeah.
And I thought I don't whatever it is you have to do to get into that club.
And Ricky did a real stellar job in terms of the single version sounds wildly different to the original version on the album. You gave it some real pizzazz.
Yeah. Well, I think the album version had like a live kit on it, and it was all recorded as a live
of the single.
I did like that version, but I just felt that as a single, it just needed to be a little bit more pizzazzy, I think. So I just got on the Fairlight. I had Fairlight 2 at the time, and I just got on that and just started programming some beats. And it just kind of, again, it evolved. Kept the original vocals. Or did we re-record some of the vocals, maybe? Can't remember. Loved producing that. It was an absolute pleasure. Loved it.
Yeah, it's a great one. Now we move on and back to Love Is Again for what was the second single from Love Is, which is Heart Over Mind, which is not really a wild song in the sense that there's no writing duties for either of you on it. Do you have good memories of that one? Dave Munday very involved.
I think I heard that song when I was working with Rick Knowles, didn't I?
Mm.
I think that's when I'd heard it, and he'd played it to us. And I loved it. I just thought it was a beautiful song, and the video is beautiful. It's one of those things where the whole thing did come together really well, but it didn't translate much as a Kim Wilde song. It sounded like a great record, but no one thought it sounded like a great Kim Wilde record. And I think there were times in our career, obviously like all careers, where you try something else. You want to go down a different road a bit, see where you can push the boundaries, see what people are going to bite, what they're not going to bite. Not that you do everything because you want to get bitten, but, you know, obviously everyone loves to have some success and have a hit. I think it took us quite a lot of years to realise what it is that we had and that we didn't have to kind of keep changing. It that we could actually keep it and go back to expand on it like we did with the album Here Come the Aliens, where we kind of went back to our roots and did it all again but kind of fresh. So Heart of the Mind was a classy song, lovely chord changes, beautiful musically, Just didn't make the charts, but you know, that's not the end of the world.
It was top, it counts, it's top 40 hit, so it's a hit, we'll count it.
Yeah, we'll take that.
The one for me, but when we talk about single choices, the one for me that I always wanted to be the second single and a single at any point was Touched by Your Magic, because that's still my favourite song.
Now, Touched by Your Magic is one of my all-time favourite songs that we've recorded. I think it's absolutely beautiful.
Is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. And, you know, and Rick and I talk about doing a, what do you call it?
Anti-tour.
That's what it's called.
Where did you get that idea
that
from?
But we have talked about anti-tour with yourself, Lee, on several occasions.
A bit.
And, yeah, I think it's a, that song would find its way there.
Oh, it's a beaut. It's a beaut.
I remember writing that with a very dear friend of mine, Mick Silver, who had a solo career as a singer back in the day, back in the 80s, and that's where I met him. I was going to be producing him. Became very close friends. A lovely, lovely man. And things didn't work out for him, and he went into recruitment, I think, and did very, very well. But he was such a great writer, had a lovely energy about him, and we just kept in contact. And like years after, he just phoned me up, said, "What are you up to?" I said, "Oh, doing this, doing that." And he said, "Fancy doing a bit of writing?" I said, "Yeah, why not?" And he came and we wrote three or four tracks, I think, and one of them was Touched by a Magic, and it's a lovely process.
Junior
and
on backing vocals, so he's back. Yeah. He was back for that one, adding a bit of magic, pardon the pun, to that one.
Absolutely,
lovely.
Thanks for reminding us about that one, Lee.
Oh, it's one of my favourites. It always will be. And track six is one of your biggies. It's Four Letter Word. The song that changed the path for Close as an album
in terms of it
rocketed it back into the charts. It took it into the top 10. You'd had massive success with the singles already. Album had done well, but Four Letter Word took it to an absolute other level. It was, you know, I think people saw a complete other side of you, Kim, that we'd seen and heard as fans on albums before, particularly slower stuff. The general public hadn't thought of you as a balladeer.
It showcased a depth that they hadn't really witnessed before.
Heard my voice in a way they hadn't heard before, that was that was very had it kind of cut through and surprise people. I think they were used to hearing me shouting out my stuff, and
and it was
like you say, only fans would know the more mellow side of Kim, and there was a lot of mellow stuff, beautiful stuff that that on our albums, but not that anyone else, unless they'd bought the album, would know about. So Four Letter Word was really opened up the whole thing massively.
And it's that Four Letter Word sounds what I call sophisty pop. That's a kind of a term for that era, where it was really sophisticated, luxurious sounding pop, and it fitted so much with things that you loved at that time. It had that climby Fisher, Scritti Politti. It just had a sheen, a shine, a polish to it, but not overdone. It was just, it fitted with that time.
Yeah.
So well.
Yeah. And again, that came very quickly. The whole thing came
written with Dad.
That was written. Dad came up with the title, Four Letter Word. And it all came very quickly. The song was, the music and the melody was very, very, very quick.
It's one of Dad's best lyrics. I think it was up for
an Ivor Novello.
And just absolutely justifiably. And I remember him playing it in the front of our studio on the guitar. You know, he was just picking away on his guitar, playing the kind of the da 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 da. I thought, what's he doing? It kind of sounded really sort of like something from the 50s or something.
Bossa Nova.
A bossa nova thing. I thought, that's typical Dad. You know, he goes down the most weird roads, but, you know, he really hit gold on that particular road.
Tough one to sing live, I imagine.
I thought it would be tough because actually it sounds that, doesn't it? But live, it's one of the ones I really nail it every time, because my voice knows the song so well. I know how to get that melody across, and I work really hard at it, because it does need to, you have to pay attention. But, you know, we're very aware when people are in the audience, they don't want to hear an approximation of that song that they went out and bought. They want to hear it note for note.
Yeah.
And my dad always reminded me of that. You know, I remember in the early days when I was rehearsing, and I might be scat singing a bit of some of the songs just because I got kind of a bit fed up singing them over and over. And then he would come up, and I always felt like hitting him. And he said, "Kim, stick to the melody."
The thing is, when you're crafting a melody, you spend so long on getting each note and sometimes lengths, and it has to be bang on. And you can change one of those notes, and it just totally, it just loses something, and you can't put your finger on why, but it just does. It just doesn't sound as good. It's not as punchy. It's not as succinct. It's not selling the song. And I think it's very easy to just, you get so used to singing the original melody that sometimes you just want to try something a little bit different. But obviously, the punters, they don't hear it like we do, you know. So they want to hear the original. They want to hear the original melody.
They want to hear the original. And I do. I mean, very, very occasionally when we're working with other artists, I hear them do that. I hear them kind of defer to a maybe slightly more soul, jazz vibe of their original. And unless you're actually going down that road and doing like your jazz version of a song of Kids in America, you know, if you're going to do that, you know, go all the way and just good luck. But stick to the melody.
I
think a lot of artists could do with that advice whispered into their ear sometimes.
How did it feel? Did it feel like, you know, not payback, but that sense of recognition when you are an album artist all of a sudden at last? You know, you'd had great success all the way through, but Close was something different in your career in terms of, you know, you were album artists with that. It changed things, how you're perceived.
Yeah, I think it got people also looking back to the albums previous as well. They kind of thought, well, hang on, if this is what this is like, maybe that sort of Checkered Love Girl and View from a Bridge Girl, actually those other albums, which were there about four at that point, I think. You'll remind me, Lee.
Five.
And, you know, a lot of great stuff on them. And people went back and listened to the back catalogue, and that was really good. But, I mean, it was a real roller coaster of a career. You know, we sort of came in really strong with the first album, and everyone loved that. It was hugely successful. And the second one, too, and Select and Cambodia and all of that. And then we kind of started going on a bit of a round the houses ride, experimenting with our songwriting, experimenting with my voice. Also, quite a lot of distraction because I was doing a hell of a lot of traveling. So sometimes it lost its direction. I would say sometimes, just because I physically wasn't there.
It's impossible to write when you're travelling anyway. Or touring, you know, it's just impossible. Everyone says, oh my God, it must be such an inspiring time. It's not. It just don't work.
You're always on the way to somewhere or back to somewhere.
Yeah, and you're knackered, or you might be on a high from the gig, and you have a party, and the next day you're feeling a bit rough. You know, so, you know, there never seems to be a good time to actually sit down and you know, write something. You know, it's just impossible.
I think there were a few years where things were put together in less than ideal situation. But you know, you can always, if it doesn't matter which album you hear in those during that time, it's still always there. There's still a craft going on.
Absolutely.
There's still Ricky's amazing production, the melodies shining through, and the whole thing evolving. It's you can see that now, I think, in the fullness of time. But you know, at that time, of course, in 88, when Close came out and all this success again, we'd already known what the roller coaster was like going down, and then to come back up so high and so big and so bad, of course, because we ended up on Michael Jackson's Bad Tour with that at the same time. So it was, I just thought, oh, here we go. When you're hot, you're hot.
Yeah.
But we knew what it was like to not be hot.
But it was great as well, the journey that Close had, because the Close success wasn't instant. The single success was, but Close as an album, as we say, flew as a result of Four Letter Word and stayed around for a while. So so we're on to track 7, which is another interesting one. So it's Say You Really Want Me, which is, you know, not a Wild song either, but my God, you've got some musical royalty involved in this one in terms of who's behind the scenes. So Rod Temperton,
yes,
you know, who'd worked with Michael Jackson on Thriller. He'd worked with Karen Carpenter. He'd worked with Quincy Jones on Places You Find Love, which is one of my favourite songs of Quincy Jones from his Back on the Block album, I think it's called. It's part of a soundtrack as well. It's on the Running Scared soundtrack, which is a big movie.
Yeah.
Is that the influence of MCA and the American Record Company?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It was totally that. And they got involved, and we never got on that great with them, did we, Rick? We just didn't get on with them.
Not really.
We didn't get on with them. But this was their contribution to my career. And we ran with it and we had some fun with it. And God, the video was gorgeous to make.
You made a lot of boys, girls and everyone happy with that video.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, there's nothing bad about writhing on four gorgeous men in a swimming pool with not much on. I mean, you know, I kind of fully just gave in to the whole of whatever it was. There's only one way to express, say, you really want me.
When I look at the recording notes on it, it says recorded at Larrabee Sound and Westlake Audio in LA, which are like legendary places. Did you record your bit there? What was that like being there?
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, working around those sorts of those places, those legendary places, being in LA at that time in my career.
Are you with Kim when she goes and does that stuff, or is she out there?
No, I didn't go to that session.
Yeah, so I was, so it was wonderful to be part of that. There was a part of me that didn't feel part of it. I felt like a bit of a fish out of water, but it was an incredible experience to be that age and being driven around in a open top Cadillac and turning up at Larrabee Sound, and the atmosphere and the whole experience was wonderful for me. But I think from a musical point of view, I always miss my bestie who was back home. And
but he got to do a little bit of tweaking tweaking of the single version too, so it gets a bit of a Ricky touch.
I can't remember what I did to it, but
more pizzazz again, definitely pizzazz.
I pizzazzed it, did I?
The other thing, not thinking about the video for a second, but when people think about visuals back in the day, as well as thinking about some videos being iconic, you've actually done some really iconic TV performances. And I know it's lip syncing and all the rest of it, and I don't know if you remember this one, but this is one of my favourites of your TV performances. You performed on a show called The Roxy, which was ITV's answer to Top of the Pops. You know, like when we used to have the Gallup chart, which was the BBC chart, and that was Top of the Pops. And then for a while we had the kind of like commercial Top 40, and it was Kid Jensen and other people presenting it on the Roxy, and you had and this is, I don't know if you remember this outfit, you had this £2 jumble sale red velvet dress.
Yes, I remember it.
That was an iconic Kim performance, TV
it was
performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the imagery and the video of that kind of that whole era of that song overtook the song itself. We don't do the song live, and we never will. I don't think it's not one we feel emotionally bound to, but you know, we don't, you know, it's fine. It's just not one of our favorites, but we respect that it happened, and it was
part of our journey. TV show,
and that red velvet, it was worth it just to wear that red velvet dress. Yeah, from the jumble sale. Did look great, didn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it's roughly the same week, because you can tell by your hair, bizarrely, that you did an Elvis tribute for ITV as well, where you did One Night With You and
With
Boy George.
Yeah, I did. I remember that very well.
Yeah,
so.
that was very good.
Yeah, I remember that very well, working with Boy George at that point. And having, you know, I mean, we'll talk about Boy George later,
yes,
but I've got some lovely stories about Boy, so we'll talk about that later.
So if anyone is listening to this wondering what we're talking about in terms of that performance, it is, someone has uploaded it on YouTube, so you can watch, put The Roxy and Say You Really Want Me and Kim Wilde into YouTube and you'll find it. Go relive it. But very briefly as well, the video was banned. It actually
got
banned.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
Something to do with, and I'm going to be careful how I say this, and I think I can say this, I think it was partly due to the actual piece of jewellery that is called a pearl necklace. Which might not have been completely accidentally chosen.
But you know what, Lee, and this is the truth, I had no idea. I mean, I had no idea.
Wear this, Kim, this will be great.
Do you know what, I had no idea about pearl necklaces. Oh, I'd love God. To have been. I think, you know, girls don't know about that stuff.
I'd love to have been a fly on the wall when someone told you.
It wasn't until afterwards that someone told me, you know what that's all about, don't you? So I was pretty naive still in those days.
I'm glad we got that one.
Thanks for reminding me.
Hey, Mr. Heartache is track 8. We've mentioned this one already.
Yes.
But another interesting journey as well, because when I think about I was thinking about this the other day. So I don't know if you saw the news story recently about a very popular singer called Ray, R-A-Y-E. She's a great British soul singer. She had loads of hits kind of featuring on other people's stuff. She signed to a big label, but she put this really desperate tweet out the other day, basically saying, I'm trapped with my record company, they won't release my album.
I read that.
And loads of artists have jumped to her support, basically saying, you know, this is awful, and how you feel. And the reason I mention it is, back in the day of Close and of Hey Mr. Heartache, Hey Mr. Heartache wasn't a big hit, but it didn't matter. You know, you got to carry on, you got to release the album, you got to release, you know, more singles off it. But for some artists now, they don't get that opportunity. No. It's so different. Yeah. You know, if the first single doesn't go boom, that's it. There's no album deal part of the way that it's worked out for them. So it just, when I was thinking about, again, that journey of Close, even on your career, you've talked about having those ups and downs. Close had its own journey.
The album itself had exactly the same journey,
And do you know why Hey Mr. Heartache was first single? Was it? What
I think we always knew that it wasn't going to be the one that was like Kids in America for Kim's first album. We had to go with our strongest one, and that was always going to be the first single. Mind you, the rest of the album wasn't actually written then. I don't think was it. I can't remember now. but either way, it would have been the first single.
It was quite close. Pardon the pun. They were quite close in timings.
Yeah. But I just think we just felt that it would be a lovely way to introduce the album, and we weren't expecting it to go top 5 or number 1 or anything like that. We just thought it'd be a lovely way to introduce this new sound and new Kim Wilde era, and it really did exactly what we wanted it to do. And it wasn't a massive hit, but that was fine, because we had stronger ones on the way.
Oh, yeah. as
commercially stronger. Not necessarily better, but just more commercial. I think Hey Mr. Heartache is a fabulous song. We love producing it. Tony Swain was wonderful. I co-produced the whole album with Tony. He's a wonderful talent, and he really put his stamp on that track. I think where I'd be doing like most of the programming, he said, well, maybe try this, maybe try that, and he came up with that lovely that was all Tony. And the moment he did that against this bass drum sort of like just punching away, it just took it in a different kind of way that I think I would have gone. And it just set it alight, and it just sounded great. And then the more we recorded the vocals, and then Junior came in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
and sung all those backing vocals, and it was just like, wow, this is really happening. And it just felt like the perfect song to introduce the new Kim Wilde.
Yeah, lovely. So this is an interesting one. I'm interested to see how you react when I tell you track 9 is Rage to Love.
Love Rage that track.
To Love. Yeah.
I love it. Do you know what? I found an old remix album yesterday when I was going through my old KW stuff.
Is it the Aussie one? There's an Aussie remix album. I wonder if it's that.
It might be. It's got like a cross on it. Of it's blue and it's... Anyway, I couldn't find the cover. And I thought, oh, I'm going to listen to see what that... And all of a sudden, Rage to Love came on. That guitar, that opening riff is so beautiful, and I love the song so much. And we haven't put it in the set, and we're so excited about, because we're going to introduce it into the new set for the Greatest Hits next year in a big way. Can't tell you much more than that, but we're very excited about that. Maybe not in its entirety, but certainly, you know, all the best bits of that song are going to find their way live next year.
Bit of a homage to Dad in a way. It's got a rockabilly feel, hasn't it?
Yeah, I would say more Stray Cats.
Stray Cats.
Stray Cats. I was a huge fan of Stray Cats. I loved them. Brian Setzer's guitar.
Dave Edmunds was involved.
Well, Dave Edmunds was the obvious choice to come in and mix it, because he worked with the Stray Cats and he'd got that amazing sound for Runaway Boys. And I kind of like thought that's kind of what it needed. And he came in, bless him, he said he just wants to do it. He didn't want to talk about money or payment or anything like that. He said, look, I just want to do it. And he came in and he spent the whole day, and I literally deliberately went out and just did, I can't remember where I went, but I just wanted to stay away so I could come back in with fresh ears. And what he did with that track, he just transformed it from being, I mean, it did sound great when I left it, but when I came back, it sounded amazing. I mean, what he'd done with that, all the drums and the bass, and that's the kind of like the slap bass on it and everything. It's just fantastic, you know.
Remember that great remix you did? There was a really great remix that Rick did of it. I don't know where it is now. I'm not sure that it's made it on the album. I don't think it has, but great track. And as I say, you know, we have a great affection for that track.
Yeah, but bless him, he did a wonderful job, and I think we paid him with a crate of champagne.
Bless him. Good on you, Dave Evans.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Bless
more
you.
More iconic outfits too, the jackets that you wore in the video, like the rockabilly, I call them rockabilly.
I think actually that jacket was my dad's, and I have worn my dad's jackets over the years. That whole connection with rock and roll is very strong for both Ricky and I. Of course, Kids in America was born from rock and roll and punk and new wave. Rock and roll is always somewhere at the heart of what we do somehow. It's never that far away.
More so now than ever, actually.
Yeah, that's very true. Absolutely. And along with that, I've been to Dad's jackets And interestingly, the jacket that I'm wearing on the cover of the Greatest Hits Pop Don't Stop album is my dad's jacket.
Oh, wow.
And he gave it to me several months before I took the photograph, and I wanted to wear it for that as a way of having him on the album, as well as a writer.
Yeah.
It was my homage to him wearing that jacket. But also underneath, I'm wearing a Sex Pistols T-shirt, which people, you know, those with a canny eye will notice. And that's where that's my homage to punk, obviously, which is what inspired Ricky and I so much. So the sleeve is telling
a lot
more of
there.
A story than it might appear on first glance.
We're nearly halfway on CD 1, and track 10 takes us back to Love Is. It's Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah.
Very popular with the fans, this one. Lots of people pick this as one of their faves.
Great video.
Yeah, fabulous video.
Really? I had so much fun, and it was very hard work, and all those different looks.
Loads
and
of looks.
Trying to look like Betty Davis or what's the other one? Joan Crawford. I think I was doing a Joan Crawford. I did a few people anyway. Yeah, I even did myself at the end, I think, which was really silly. But had a lot of fun. Talking about that video, I mean,
big pop
it wasn't
song.
About anyone in particular, you know,
no.
It was inspired obviously by lots of huge personalities yes. around us, you know. And now I think about it, you know, I mean, it does take a big personality to go out there and be a pop star and carry it off. And you know, of course, some of that ego does go to some people's heads, and sometimes it is gross to see, and sometimes it's a bit offensive and boring and tired. But most of the time, I would say the vast majority of time, most artists carry it off with a lot of humility, a lot of class, a lot of excitement. I think musicians, you know, they get a lot of bad press about being big-headed or it's gone to their head. I think most of them don't actually deserve it, and there aren't more people like that in the music industry than there are in any other industry. True. I mean, I had spent a few years in the horticultural industry, and I can tell you that there's a huge amount of egos in that industry as there are in the music industry. So, yeah,
just not written about.
Just not written about.
I remember when I wrote that, all the chords and the backing, thinking this has got something. I really like this, and then it was recorded. And then it was released, and the video, and blah, 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 blah. And then we went on to the next track, and I started writing that. And for some reason, that particular song kind of was I left it, and I didn't hear it for years after that. And as we were coming to do this Greatest Hits tour, which has now obviously been cancelled because of the COVID.
Postponed,
yeah. Yes. But it was cancelled then when it first... Yeah, and so I was kind of like refreshing myself with all these different songs, and that one came on, and I was really surprised. I'd totally forgotten so much about that song,
really,
and the chord changes and everything. I just thought, wow, that's actually not bad at all. So yeah. I loved it back in the day. It wasn't one of my ultra favourites, but I really loved it.
This is such a good opportunity to point out that whenever I talk to Ricky, you just have no idea of some of the good stuff that you've done, not just in terms of how good it is, but the stuff you don't even remember doing. So for Love Is, you did loads of remixes and extended versions. The Try Again Club Mix, for example, is a stunner. It's an absolute stunner.
I'll take your word for it.
It's amazing. Try Again is a beautiful song anyway from Love Is.
Love Try Again.
Oh, bless you, Lee. Thank you.
Is really good. And you did an extended version of Touched by Your Magic, which was really, really good. You did a club mix of Million Miles Away.
Oh.
I don't remember any of those. I don't even remember doing them, actually.
The Try Again Club Mix is definitely up there. Oh,
wow.
It takes the song somewhere very, very different from the original version.
I'll take that.
It's a great one, trust me.
Just quickly, it was just lovely to come back to that and hear it again. But when I heard it again, it's kind of like hearing it almost for the first time. And there are certain things that suddenly happened. I thought, God, that wouldn't have thought of doing that.
Yeah,
but I did it.
That's amazing to fans.
So strange
that you know we hear your stuff and you know absorb your music, and when new stuff comes out, it becomes wallpaper to us because it's part of our life forever.
Yeah.
But for you guys, I guess if you're not playing, if it's not part of your live set.
Yeah,
unless you're doing a greatest hits or putting something together, you're on to
well, that's it.
Is next.
Your head's in a totally different space.
They don't stick with you in the same way. Okay. So track 11, another big favourite of mine, definitely should have been the first single from Love Moves. It's Can't Get Enough. It's Never Trust a Stranger Part 2.
It is. Yeah.
What again, that chorus came really quickly. Can't get enough of your love. That's the first thing I thought of when I was writing it, and that's the title that it just stuck. And it's just
love the guitars in it as well.
Yeah,
love the energy of it.
Big rock track.
And it's really fun to do live. And we have done it over the years, not in recent years, and we are going to be putting it back in the
it
set
deserves
again.
Deserves its spot.
Yeah, big energy. I'll have to be extra fit for that one.
And when we talk about remixing, our dear friend Steve Anderson did a club mix of that as DMC of Can't Get Enough of Your Love back in the day.
Legend.
The legend.
Legend
that is. Yeah. So he's touched.
He is.
Where
is such a legend. We love you, Steve. We love you,
Steve.
We do.
We do.
Thinking about imagery as well, I would say photo shoot wise, the photos that you did for the whole Love Moves album and across the singles are really beautiful. John Rutter, I think, did them. There's a consistency to them, and they're just really, really, really lovely.
You know, I mean, I've done a lot of photographs over the years, and I have a lot of them at home, far too many, and it's really what to do with them. I took some really great pictures, and unfortunately, you know, like a lot of people, my eye always goes to the not so good pictures, and I sort of think, oh god, you know, that picture, oh my god. But actually, yeah, there were some beautiful ones, and they were amongst the best, I think.
Yeah, the Love Moves ones are lovely. Yeah. So we're moving on to track 12, and a huge change, a huge era here. It's the Now and Forever era, and it's Breaking Away, which is the first single from Now and Forever. Whole different team involved here.
Yep.
Damon Rochefort, who we know was Nomad, and
Aaron Friedman.
Aaron Friedman was involved.
Yeah, I remember Aaron.
They were badged as Serious Rope. That was their production moniker. Very different experience for you, Kim, having backing vocalists, you not doing your own backing vocals, and having, you know, a totally different feel.
Yeah.
How do you look back on Breaking Away?
Well, I love that album. It's amongst my personal favourite albums, Now and Forever. And I loved Breaking Away. I loved every single track on the album. And if I go back and listen to my old stuff, that will be the album I'll start off with. Songs like Life and Soul, which I just absolutely adore. Actually, Life and Soul was a song that came about because we'd been on tour just prior to recording the album. And I remember I was sat at the front with a coach driver, and we were talking about Rick, who'd been up to his usual antics. And and the driver said, oh, he's the life and soul of this bus, isn't he? And I said, that's a great title for a song, you know. I'm going to write that when I get back. And I loved making the twist on it, that I made the twist on the lyric, and it made it mean something else. Breaking Away, I mean, oh my god, the backing vocals as well,
amazing.
The singers were just glorious right across the album, lighting it up. I mean,
Sylvia Basin James, I seem to remember on there, Melanie Lewis, Georgia Lewis,
awesome. Their voices together just created this wall of beautiful angelic sound, and gave the album it's a great characteristic.
Yeah,
and who
very
wouldn't
vibe-y.
Want to go rollerblading in LA to shoot a video?
Yeah, well, I had that option, and I had been, I did know how to rollerblade a bit, and I just said, just make me look like I'm much better than I am. So, of course, which they did. It was a wonderful time in my career to just kind of really indulge in some of the R&B grooves that I was really into. You know, I loved Aaliyah and
Pebbles and Janet.
I loved all of that music, and I had boom sort of box put in my car, and I would really live the whole genre of that music, and I still really love that. I mean, Hey Mr. Heartache was like that, you know, it was going down our sort of funky soul road, and that is a big part of our great love of music too.
And you love your dance stuff, Rick, don't you?
How did
you approach that kind of change in...
Well, I think Aaron Friedman, working with Aaron was a real inspiration for me. I mean, he's like me, he's a writer and producer, and he programs as well, so I learned a lot from Aaron. I always learn from working with other producers and other writers. It's a lovely process for me, and it's nice for me to have someone to bounce off ideas from, and I can do it on my own, but it's just nice to have someone else there and for affirmation sometimes, you know. And Aaron was I learned a lot from him with how he programmed, and I don't know anybody who works the same way with the programming that app that I use. Everybody has their own different ways of working, and Aaron was totally different to mine, but I learned a lot from him, and it was and that whole process, and in turn he was like, I learned a lot from me, which is lovely. He was like saying, well, I wouldn't have done it that way, but now you have, that's really interesting, maybe try this, maybe try that. And it was a really lovely process. I've got lots of wonderful memories of working with him. He's a lovely man, and incredibly talented, and he introduces to all those amazing backing vocalists and musicians, you know, some of the musicians he brought in as well. So it's a wonderful process for me, and I absolutely loved it.
And Hypnotize was one of my favourite songs on
Hypnotize,
that album.
Yeah.
Sort sort of went more down a sort of more traditional Kim Wilde, you know, that's
a Kim and Ricky song.
Hypnotized could have been on previous albums, in fact any previous album virtually. It was a classic Kim and Rick song, and it's actually one of my favorites on the album.
Well, that was very inspired by Jam and Lewis as well, so yeah. They're absolutely incredible at the time, all the Janet stuff that they were doing and all these beautiful chords and lovely lush synth sounds and incredible producers and just beautiful sound that they had, and that is very inspiring for me at the time.
The other thing about Breaking Away, I remember talking about TV, it was I think one of the first times you'd gone full out on choreo and learned dance routines. You had male dancers for Breaking Away. How do you approach
that? My video director Phil Griffin, his partner, now husband, was an amazing dancer and would choreograph the guys for me, and I did get involved in that a bit. I've never seen myself as a dance artist. I see others do it really, really well. You know, Kylie, Madonna, those people do it great. You know, stick with what you're good at. I mean, I never felt
But this was the pre-Ricky Wilde choreography, obviously.
That's the You Spin Me Round choreography.
I seem to recall,
And aliens choreography.
I mean, choreography, I can have some fun with choreography, but it ain't my bag, and I know it's not what I'm best at, but I did have some fun with that, and it was great to go into that area for a while, but it didn't hold much interest for me.
Fair
as a dancer.
Track 13, Not Unlucky At All, is another, we keep saying this, classic Kim and Ricky track. It's Time from Love Moves, second single from Love Moves.
Time again, that was a very Jam and Lewis, you know, those kind of Jam and Lewis chords. It's a lovely song to program and write, and Kimmy's vocal on that, I really love Kimmy's vocal, and the lyric that she came up with as well was absolutely beautiful. But again, Time, you know, it's such just one word, time.
Yeah,
falling in love with you.
I didn't get
time.
Why that one didn't connect with the public. It's one of those where you look back and you just and I didn't see why that didn't smash, that one. You just can't, occasionally, you just think, I don't get why this hasn't connected, this one. Because it's a beaut.
It was kind of, it's a bit of a departure musically from what we'd done before, I guess. Maybe people weren't
like
ready for that.
To you, a part two to You Came, in a way. There's something melodic.
Maybe.
A little.
Maybe. But sound-wise, it was more soulful rather than poppy, I think.
It was more soulful,
I think that people wanted to hear pop stuff, really, at that time. But I think it's important to try different avenues and go different.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking about it, because that's where there was a bit of choreography. And every time, and I have seen that video, and I see that bit of choreography, I absolutely cringe. Thank God you didn't inflict any more of those moves on the world. We did actually do some lovely filming in Florence in Italy, which was utterly beautiful.
Yeah, it's a lovely
shots.
Oh
my God,
it's
so gorgeous there. So you know, there are lots of lovely memories of that song.
Super. Track 14, and again, very different for its time. It was Love Is Holy.
Yeah.
So, first single from Love Is, big shift. Ricky's not involved, you know, with the first single, shock.
Yeah.
So, pressure off, which might have been nice for you at the time. You're off with Rick Knowles and Ellen Shipley.
Yeah, I'm off to with Rick Knowles. I'm not quite sure how that came to be, actually, but I mean, clearly, obviously, his track record was glorious, and MCA were up for, you know, getting me to collaborate with other people. You know, that sounded like a great idea at that time that stage in my career. So I was over in America working with Rick Knowles. He was a ball of energy. I guess he hasn't changed. I mean,
true that you used to have to record the vocal like literally almost 100 times? He'd get you to over and over.
Do you know what? He worked me so hard that in the end I ended up in hospital.
Well, at least you've never done that, Ricky.
No, literally, I was in LA and I was getting these terrible headaches, and I couldn't work out why, and I was really worried about getting on the plane, and I made them take me to hospital to have a look. look and see what was going on. But it was literally just the stress and strain of working with Rick Knowles in a studio. It was very intense, really exciting. He was a ball of energy. He was just great. He just loves pop music like you wouldn't believe. I thought I'd never meet someone who loved pop music more than Rick and I did. And then he played me Love Is Holy on a guitar. And, this is the demo that is just flying around. I said, that sounds like a smash to me, Rick. What are you doing with it? He said, well, nothing. Right, I'll have that. And, it's a lovely song. It's beautiful. And the video was awesome.
That expensive dress.
Yeah, expensive dress and beautiful lighting and just gorgeous photographs. So it was a lovely moment in my career.
Yeah, lovely. Track 15 is If I Can't Have You. So this is obviously at the time of the first greatest hit, the first proper greatest hits back in 93, the singles collection. I was always curious to know, what other covers did you think about? Because obviously you decided you were going to go with a cover, not take a risk with an original song and go with something that people would know.
I have to say, my wife, Mandy, she'd been listening to it and she said to me, I love this song and this could be a good cover. And that kind of like sparked the idea, really. And I thought, well, maybe if we have some guitars and maybe if we make it a bit rockier. So I did my version, which had like loads of guitars and like a typical Ricky Wilde punky kind of vibe to it. And then MCA heard it and said, well, we don't really hear it that way, but we want to get it remixed. So I thought, yeah, great, go for it. And then Phil Kelsey did the remix, and it came back. And I thought, it wasn't my cup of tea, I've got to be honest. It wasn't really how I'd heard it. But it sounded good, and it sounded like it. So I wasn't going to go against it at all.
I think you went to number one in America. In Australia.
Yeah.
So I was in Australia at the time. Yeah. I was living in Australia for a year, and that song was everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
The video was, well, they used to have video screens in the nightclubs in Australia where I was on the Gold Coast for that year, and that video just played on a loop everywhere.
It was
such a great song.
Eye-catching video, I must say myself.
It was.
It was an eye-catching video.
We won't discuss the reasons why.
It was eye-catching, definitely. So that was great. It happened at a great time. Like,
and Jackie Graham did backing vocals on that, I think, didn't she?
She may well have done. That's something Lee might know.
I can't remember now. Did Jackie do
Oh, my God, because we love Jackie Graham.
We talk about Jackie a bit later on, quite maybe. Soon,
I think
actually.
She probably did, actually. Now I can hear her voice singing on it, maybe. But...
we'll contact her afterwards and check.
Yeah, I can't remember.
It was a wonderful thing to kind of get the greatest hits at that point. It did so, so well all over the world. We got discs flying around all over our walls from all over the world for that. And it was a wonderful time for us, you know, a collection, a retrospective of what we'd done, where we'd been. And it gave us a lot of confidence to kind of move forward.
Moving on, we're going back to Now and Forever, which is nice. So it's the second single from that, which is This I Swear, which is a Tony Swain songwriting. He wrote that one with Pam Shane, who also wrote Genie in a Bottle for Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, so, writer.
Amazing writer.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that one? It's a lovely ballad.
It's a beautiful sounding song. I mean, if you put it on sonically and melodically, it's a beautiful, it's a sublime thing. And wonderful working with Tony Swain. I did, you know, months and months, hours and hours and hours of writing with Tony at his studio, at his home. Other than working with Ricky, one of the most rewarding musically collaborations. Several of our songs ended up on albums, Storm in Our Hearts being one of them, and several others. But working with him, and when he played me this, I swear, I thought there's something really beautiful, special, and it kind of really went with, it reflected very much what was going on in my personal life as well. So it sort of, the whole thing became a very personal thing for me. And it was a moment in time that got captured by a song, which has happened over the years, not all the time, but every now and again, one song really captures the zeitgeist of what's going on in my life. And This I Swear was one of them.
One of the other ballads, just to give it props, From Now and Forever, that I talked to someone about the other day, hilariously. So I don't know if you know what Discogs is. Discogs is that secondhand online music store, which loads of people have been using through the pandemic when they've been bored and want to spend some money. And I've replaced loads of my old vinyl that way. Anyway, I went and bought some stuff on the other from there the other day. And it turns out the seller was none other than, wait for it, CJ McIntosh. It was on his personal collection. And you have an ability to chat through the app. So I said, oh, hi, CJ, I've just bought some of your 12 inches, ironically. I said, loved your stuff with Kim From Now and Forever, particularly Come On and Love Me. And his reply was, that was my favourite song from working
that was
with
a great
Kim.
Song. Yeah, Come On and Love Me. That was a
that
saucy
was a
little number.
That was lovely,
jazzy,
lovely
smoky,
saucy little number. Ooh, I love the way it just sort of like grooves on at the end as well. It just doesn't kind of fade out or anything.
That's
it doesn't
beautiful.
Stop when you think it might stop. It just carries on in this really funky groove. I love that.
It's a real summery, soulful jam, I think.
Really captures summer. That's a real summer sounding song.
Yeah. So it was great. He remembered it instantly. He was like, yeah, that's my favourite from working with Kim too. And he replied, which was really sweet. So hello, CJ, and thank you for that song. It's
an amazing talent.
Sexy little song.
Yeah, it was wonderful working with him as well. Again, I learned a lot from CJ. And it's funny because we had two studios at Select Sound. And while he'd be doing a lot of the programming in the front room, and I'd be in the back room working on all the vocals, so that's kind of how we work together. And but yeah, he was so talented and very subdued and very cool and very chilled, you know. And it's a very relaxing. The whole thing was a very relaxing album, and it sounded like it as well.
Yeah, it did.
So we can now talk about Jackie Graham, because we're talking about track 17.
I love Jackie Graham.
We love Jackie Graham.
Jackie.
It's I Can't Say Goodbye from Love Moves.
Yeah.
And you've got not just Jackie Graham, but you've got Dion Estes on bass from George Michael's band. And you've got strings by Richard Niles. You've got some pop royalty in here.
We did. Yeah, what a wonderful experience that was. Just working with all those incredible artists and musicians, it's just absolutely wonderful. It was a real buzz going in the studio, recording the strings. And
we did that at RAC.
Yeah,
we did. I remember going in because I remember seeing the orchestra in there and being in the control area.
Yeah,
what's that like when it's a song you've written?
Oh, it was
and
overwhelming.
And then you see an orchestra.
Oh, it was so overwhelming. Oh. I was so proud. It was one of those moments I have as a postcard in my head of seeing the strings happening to this song that had happened on a piano in my flat. So yeah, it was one of the magic moments.
It's our dear friend Steve Anderson's favourite track that you've done as well.
Oh,
he
loves that.
He absolutely adores it. And it's a beautiful song. It's a stunning song.
Oh, yeah, isn't that lovely? Yeah,
Tune. Yeah. One of my personal favourites coming up now as track 18 is Love in a Natural Way.
Oh, yeah.
What a tune.
Beauty.
Yeah, again, that whole... Love in a Natural Way, that title came very... literally as I was playing it, and the first thing that came into my head, and then Dad, I just said, look, this is the title, take it away and see what you come up with, you know. So because I like the artist to be able to be writing the lyrics, which is kind of like why these days you know, Kim is writing most of the lyrics. I think it's important that an artist, she's going to be singing it and performing it and feeling it. So it's important that it comes from the artist, I think. So
how did it work when the three of you wrote? Because that one is billed as, from a songwriting point of view, as you, Dad and Kim, the three of you. So how do you do your bits separately? Do you add?
That on that particular track, I would be in the studio. I would produce all the backing track. After I'd worked out a key with Kimmy, I would then get the backing track happening. Sometimes, if Kim was away on tour or gigging or doing other stuff, I would have given the backing track to Dad and said, "Look, we need. I've got the chorus here, but just come up with the rest of it." And I think that was probably the case
at
that time.
Because at that time we saw, you know, I'd barged in and taken over most of the songwriting duties with Rick. So it was probably exactly that, you know, not that it wouldn't have been lovely to have Dad's lyrics, but certainly I was so busy at that point, you know, Closer was taking me all over the world, and I was very rarely in the UK for very long at all. But yeah, Dad did a fine job with that, and the music is so beautiful. It's so lush. It's such a lovely melody.
Again, it came so quickly, and I'm not saying that all the best ones come quickly, but most of the best ones do, I think.
Yeah.
What an achievement, though, to, you know, 5 top 40 hits off the album,
amazing.
And that being
absolutely
the
amazing
of the five. That's something, you know.
It's a classy song, that. It's
a pretty
is
awesome
a classy
achievement.
Song. Yeah, it's lovely. That piano threw it out. It's lovely.
Okay, we are nearly there, and I don't know what there is left to say about this song. It's track 19. It's You Came. You know, it's everyone's favourite. It's my personal favourite in terms of I think it's the best pop song ever written by anyone ever, but I'm bound to say that.
Well, it was the last song written on the Close album. We'd delivered the album to MCA, and they said, yeah, we're happy with what we have, and we don't need any more tracks, that's it. So as far as they were concerned, the album was closed. I felt that my favourite album of all time was Dare by the Human League, and it still is one of my all-time favourites. I still listen to every single track, and each track is absolutely magic and beautiful and stunning. And I just felt that there was, to make Close anywhere near that, we needed just one more. So the record label were coming up for a playback later on in the week, and I had a weekend to kind of like get a new track happening and hopefully finish before they came up. So I thought, right, that's it, it's got to be done. So I got up on the Saturday morning, went into the studio, booted all the stuff up, just me on my own, didn't have anybody in there, and I was listening to Life on Your Own by the Human League and those beautiful chords that and so I was like, that was the inspiration behind the chords that we're playing. Changed them around a bit. Then I came up with the chorus, You Came. It was fairly soon after my eldest boy Marty
had been born.
Born, and at that time, and so that was kind of like the inspiration behind it. So You Came, Change the Way I Feel, No One Could Love You More. It's like a love song to your children. And so so then I phoned up Kimmy and I said, look, I've come up with this idea, come down and we'll work on it. And so she came in, obviously absolutely loved it. I had the idea of making it obviously the inspiration was about a child, but I said, if we can try and make it a little bit more global and a little bit more, it could be pertain it to anything. It could be a best friend, it could be a lover, it could be a child, it could be religion, it could be anything that people can relate to, that's changed them, that's introduced into their lives, that has made a change the way they think. And so Kimmy totally got it, went away for a day, I think, came up with an incredible lyric. I mean, absolutely smashed it. Came in and said, look, this is the idea I've got. Yep, love it, absolutely love it, perfect, it's just what I wanted. And then we recorded the vocals, and we recorded all those lovely backing vocals in the chorus, and we mastered it just before they were the record label were coming down. And and obviously I came in, my first thought, because I've been working on it so much over those few days, was I thought it was a little bit chorus heavy, and I've kind of explained this to you before, Lee, yeah, where there's certain tracks I've worked on in the past where the chorus is fabulous. But because it's so good, I've kind of overdone it. I feel it's just too chorus heavy, and it takes away from the magic when, if you've got like a verse and you can extend that verse and make it so when that chorus comes in, you're waiting, and then it comes, it's like, oh, I love this chorus. But whereas if you play too many choruses, then it loses the punch of it, and I felt that UK may be a little bit like that, because the chords are very similar in the verse to the choruses, and the chorus is like so big. So my concern was it's just a little bit chorus heavy because I've been working on it so intensely. So then I went away from it for like a day, I think it was, and I came back and So I then played it back to Dad, and I said, well, you know, I've come up with this song, but I think it might be a little bit chorus heavy, but it's a nice track to have on the album. And then obviously he heard it and he said, Rick, that is an absolute monster. I said, really? He said, yeah. And then I kind of heard it with different ears after that, and I thought, yeah, this is actually really strong. And then obviously the record label came up, absolutely loved it, and yeah, the rest is history. But that's the story of You Came.
What a song. Thank you for giving it to us.
It's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
It's a joy to sing it when we play it and we see the way the joy that suddenly erupts in the audience. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's just something we've missed so much during the pandemic, is just seeing the faces and the joy of people's faces when they're singing that song with us. And we can't wait to just get back out. I think that song will never mean as much next year when we go out and play it than it has.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. It'll be a very, very emotional time,
yeah.
It's also going to get another lease on life. I don't know if you know that this is happening, but for a long time, people have been hassling Shep Pettibone.
Oh, yeah.
The legendary producer and remixer, to put an album together of his best remixes and shove it out on vinyl, and he's picked the You Came remix.
Oh,
and
brilliant.
It's on the vinyl.
Oh, that's
coming,
really cool.
Amazing.
In a couple of months' time, and he had so much to pick from in terms of the remix he's done, the stuff
he's done
with Madonna. And I was looking through when I heard it was coming, I thought, I wonder if he's picked You Came, and he has. It's in the
that's
mix.
Really good news. I love
that. We love Shep Fetch the Bone.
I'm not going to ask you about that. We're going to wrap part one of this amazing chat to talk about, you know, a song that, you know, changed your lives, I'm sure, which is You Keep Me Hanging On. You know, a number one smash in America. I've always wanted to ask you about that, Kim, in terms of where were you when you heard you were number one in America? What does that feel like, knowing you're the best-selling song in the States?
I mean, at that time, I was living in London, but our studio was in Nebworth in Hertfordshire, so I was doing a lot of commuting and spending a lot of time in Hertfordshire anyway, because Mum had my little brother and sister, so I was really itching, I guess, some part of me really wanted to come home. I was once more back in Nebworth in Hertfordshire, probably at the studio. I was certainly at the studio. We heard about it at the studio and we went to celebrate, I think, with an Indian meal, didn't we? We went out for an Indian, and that was kind of the way we celebrated. So we were never one to sort of go out and, and pop champagne in some exclusive restaurant somewhere. We were all in Hertfordshire. I mean, for us, it was like, let's just get back to work. I think that's how we felt about it. It was just like, this is amazing. I think I've got a dentist appointment quite soon. Mum had to pick the kids up from school. Rick was probably, you know, in the studio writing a new song.
No, I'll tell you where I was. Oh, I was actually in Psalm Studios with Brian May. I know that's a little bit of a name drop, but at the time he was producing the comic strip Presents Bad News band, which were like a spoof rock band, Rick Mayall and Aid Edmondson and Nigel Planer, and Pete. Oh, who's Pete's second name? Can't remember. I should know that. But it was like a mock band, and I was programming all the drums up because Pete wasn't a drummer, but he obviously was the drummer in the band. But so they needed drums, so I was there to produce to program all the drums up on Fairlight. So. And also, I did that because I was just desperate to work with Brian, because obviously he's like my hero from years ago. I remember listening to him as a kid. Sheer Heart Attack was the first Queen album I bought, and fell in love with all those lovely harmonies, big rock guitar, beautiful. So for me to work with my hero was an absolute honour. And so we were like getting the drums happening, and then halfway through the session, the phone goes and I pick up the phone, said hello, and it's Nick, and he said Rick, great news. What's that, mate? Hanging On's just gone to number one in America. Wow, that's fucking amazing. So I put the phone down. I said, Brian, you're not gonna believe this. What's that? I said, Hanging On, Kim, is we've just gone to number one in America. He said, oh Rick, that's fantastic news. the second verse, we need the drums to be lifted up a bit. And I was brought right back down to earth again so quickly.
Yeah, back
and,
to
but yeah, that's so there I was programming drums, and we just had a number one in America.
What does that feel like, though? You know, knowing it
was unbelievable.
You've produced the record.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
The biggest song in the land.
Yeah.
It must be incredible.
It's funny that, I remember when we were writing it, it all came from, I had a Lynn 9000.
I don't think you were writing it.
Well, no. The story behind it, I was writing a song. Well, I'd started to write a song in Little Nebworth, Select Sound Studios, and we're just sitting in the room, and I'd just got this Lynn 9000, and it had all these pads, and I put these little bell sounds on each pad, and I just kind of like got this little sequence going, which is the intro bells that you hear, that little digga digga dung digga digga dung. And so I'm sort of trying to come up with a song, an idea, melody over the top of it, and I thought, set me free, why don't you? Well, that'd be good. That goes over that. Well, actually, maybe we haven't done many covers. So I thought, then I was like, the more I sung, I thought, this could be really interesting. So then I programmed the whole thing as Keep Me Hanging On. And again, Kimmy came in and said, I'm liking this. It could be great.
How did you feel like doing Diana Ross, though? Is that quite daunting, thinking I'm going to sing?
Well, we totally changed it, though. Kim's stamp on it was like we deliberately didn't hear her version of that. We just literally just got the lyrics and we just interpreted
it. And I think we changed them even. We were pretty reckless with the song.
Yeah.
And I think that energy really is what got it to number one, you know, that energy, that reckless energy that we put into it. And then we got a telemessage from Lamont Dozier, which I have framed on my desk, which is, you know, thank you for making me look so good for the third, making you keep me hanging on for the third time, number one. I mean, you know, what a great song.
But amazing.
I'm so proud that Rick, that you got to make this, literally make the song your own, that we made it our own. And, you know, that's a real achievement and something we're so, so proud of.
It's so funny how these things happen. I didn't go in there with the thought of doing a cover. It just evolved. And that's how generally all the best things happen, I think. If it's too thought about, it sounds it.
Yeah. Well, we are at the end of part one of this amazing Greatest Hits Pop Don't Stop podcast, part two to come shortly. Thank you both for taking us through these 20 tracks and more. We've covered more than those 20 with all the others we've brought in, and bring on part two.
Beautiful. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you, Lee, and thank you, Kimmy, for coming down. That was so lovely, talking about the old days. So many memories there that I'd totally forgotten about. And so lovely that Kimmy brought them back to life again. That was a chat about CD1 of the Greatest Hits. And the next Unsung Heroes episode, we will be talking about CD2. So please tune into that. I hope you enjoyed the show. And thanks again to Lee Bennett. Lots of love to you all, and hope to see you in the second half. Cheers. Bye-bye. You have been listening to Unsung Heroes with me, Ricky Wilde, Jake Wood and Lee Bennett. Produced and created by myself and Jake Wood for Wildwood Productions. With music and editing, again by myself, Ricky Wilde. Artwork by Scarlett Wilde and hosted by Acast. Many thanks for listening. Unsung Heroes.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.